Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. Very rainy out here by the airport today. What's up, JoJo? Welcome back.
They
said we could come back.
Well, you gave me your key card, and it worked again today. So, and I've lost it, man. So I might be back tomorrow to help you find it. But, It's exciting to be back here, even though the weather's awful. By the way, if you're coming on the airport area, the interstate at 216B, whatever it is that you
get
off.
That's Briley, right?
No, it's the next one.
Oh, okay.
It's because it's when you get to the airport, there's three exits. There's one that gets you on the Donaldson Pike. There's one that gets you into the airport and one that loops you back around and takes you down Donaldson Pike towards Lebanon Road. The B exit is shut down. And it's causing massive chaos.
That's why it was nuts today.
Yeah. Okay. So avoid that area if you can today. So in addition to my duties here, I'm also the traffic reporter.
Well, we need one. So
you're welcome.
We'll just keep adding things to your
I'd list. Still at all Fox 17, so it's no big deal. I get their traffic.
I mean, you're no Justin McFarlane.
I am not. By the way, my man's lost 75 pounds.
He looks good.
He does look good.
Does look good. He's a good man.
75.
Yeah, it's good. The Dr. Crane is behind the glass. Nick Frazier with us. What's up, Nick?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, it is a little rainy out here, but we brought the energy today. I'm stoked. I woke up early, as usual, got the coffee in. Honduran coffee, by the way. That stuff's unbelievable.
Why is that better than regular coffee?
Well, I have a neighbor behind me. She's from Honduras.
Okay.
And she's brought me different types of coffee.
Obviously, smuggler. Oh, go ahead.
Honduran coffee. I've had a true Colombian blend. I've had Guatemalan coffee, and it has a natural vanilla flavor to it, which is really cool.
Nice.
And then obviously the Italian blends as well. So call me a coffee connoisseur if you want, but yeah.
I'm going to go with snob, but you know what?
Yeah, yeah, right.
One or the other.
Dr. Crane dropping the coffee knowledge. Well, that's good, fine. Man.
Hey, see, that's on brand with the whole Dr. Crane thing because he's – you know, kind of.
Yeah, let me ask you this.
I'm sure Frazier is a coffee snob.
Oh, he's got to be. The Honduran neighbor, I should not ask this. Young, old?
She's young. Yeah, she's around probably in her 30s.
She's single?
Cute?
No, she's not. they're expecting a kid in the coming months.
Well, congratulations.
Okay, congratulations to her, yes.
As a good doctor, you're the kind of psychiatrist for the show. You knew where we were headed, so thank you.
This is the only show I can actually say I am a qualified doctor.
Yeah,
so
you
thank
are.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, buddy. Yeah.
You stayed at a Holiday Inn last night or something like that.
Well, yeah, those commercials, which I never laugh. But anyway, it's good times.
Yeah, so good to be back for show number two officially, Titans and Saints. We'll have John McClain join us from Houston every Wednesday at 9:30 for 30 minutes. We'll talk Titans NFL with him. Rick Stockstill, MTSU head football coach, coming up at 10:30. So a packed show, but Titans will open their season against the Saints down in New Orleans and the Superdome. And, Joe, I'm going to tell you, I kind of went on a rant a few weeks ago where I was ranting about the kicker. I'm like, I'm talking about the kicker because they can't seem to figure the kicker out.
Right.
And I'm so over this offseason, like, is this fixed? Is this, you know, what are they going to do with this spot? The offensive line. And it's like we have to do it. It's part of it. But now they finally are here to play the games, and I am just like, I almost said drop the puck. Just kick it off. Not yet. We're not dropping pucks.
Well,
yet.
It's
just
critical.
It
you win that first game, and we've talked about it for a long time. Win that first game, and if you go 0-2, the record is of making the playoffs is like almost nil. I'm going back to when the 16-game season was around. It was like something like 8%. So that's a bad team down there without Kamara. Go down there and beat them. Run the football 1,000 times. The defense is fantastic. We know what Derek Carr can and cannot do. And then get the win and come back. And then you're 1-0. But you have to set the tone. I think that Titans defense can set the tone on Sunday. And, you know, you don't need a lot of points. I think they win like 20-10 or something.
You know, I'm going back. I was trying to think about this. I feel like, though, and you would know this, historically, since the Titans have been the Titans, I would say that the percentage of them winning the opener has been, I think it's they've lost the opener more than they've won it. Does that feel right to you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Like they've lost the last two. They won 19 and 20. They won those openers.
Well, I tell people all the time that you're like, the Titans' biggest win, Music City Miracle. Well, that's a great win. The biggest win for me the Titans ever had, was the opening game at Nissan Stadium in 1999 when they beat the Bengals. That was just critical because it set the tone for the entire season. Made that great run. They went 13-3. They should have lost that game, and then Del Greco came in and got the game for them. And I remember when McNair went out, people cheered. He came back in, they booed. It was crazy.
Was that Nilo Achilles Donald. Smith with Cincinnati?
I don't remember. It might have been Jeff Blake. I don't know. I don't remember.
For some reason, I thought it was Achilles Smith.
I'm not sure about that. So it was critical. They beat Cleveland the next week with 2-0, but that game there. But anyway, you go back to opening wins. What was the one here against the Vikings in 2016? It was a beautiful day. Lost that game, and then on and on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking back. They won three straight from 13 to 15, and then they didn't.
13, was that the Steelers game?
Yeah.
When was it Darius Reynaud who got the kickoff on the one and kneeled in the end zone?
Yeah.
And they got they were down. Yeah.
But they
were
won
down,
that. They did win that game.
They were down 2-0 and no time off the clock already that game.
Yeah.
So 14, they beat Kansas City.
14 was Kansas City, yeah.
That was Wisenhut's first game.
Yep.
And then went back to Kansas City. 15, they beat, Tampa Bay.
Yep. Because it was Mariota versus Winston.
That's right.
And then they didn't win another opener until, I think, 19.
It's great. I can win those games, but I can't remember how I got to work today. That's just the way my mind goes.
But, I mean, look, the opener, because I remember in 2000, we were talking about 2000's the best Titans team they've ever had.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
They lost to Buffalo.
That's right.
And I remember that because I was like, oh, no, here we go. Now they went 13-3 the year before, went to the Super Bowl, and they lose to Buffalo in the rematch, you know, from the Music City Miracle.
Yep.
And I think it was here. Wasn't it here?
The rematch?
I think so.
It was up there. It was a Sunday night game. And I remember that because Mike Roan, the tight end, blew his knee out, and it was awful. It was an awful knee injury. Never played again.
That's right. Yeah, that was
– Wisconsin.
Yeah, they lost. It was 16-13.
Was 08 – you have the schedule. Was 08 the Vince game where he melted down? Was that the opening game?
Yeah, Jacksonville.
2008, yeah.
I was here. I was at that game.
When Vince melted down. You know, it's funny. All the coaches were wired up for NFL films. They'll never release it. But during that game, Fisher goes over to Vince Young, and he says something, and Vince shakes his head. I've always wanted to know what Fisher said to him. Because you could speculate all day long what he said to him, but they're never going to release that.
Yeah.
Ever get out. And Fisher watched it.
He won't talk. No. Won't talk about it.
It's in the past.
Yeah.
So I always wonder what happened that day, and that was.
I remember I was at that game with my friend, and the seats were pretty good, and you could see on the Titans sideline, I could see that whole thing going on, and Kerry Collins comes in, and that was they started 10-0.
That's right.
And they lost to who broke the streak?
Houston.
Nope.
Jacksonville.
Nope.
No. Oh, the
think that year
the Jets.
Yes, with
Brett Favre.
Yep. 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 That was Favre.
And I remember that. It's funny about that. After that, the press conference, Favre was going deer hunting in Tennessee for the next 3 days. It was in November, and deer season was open.
Yeah, they lost. The Jets came in here and won 34-13. Then they lost to Houston 13-12 at Houston. And then Colts, yeah.
And they got bounced the first game. I was at Channel 2. We already had reservations in Tampa that year.
I know. Well, and there was a member of our on-air staff that was a part of the team that bounced them.
I'll never forget. I told Derek he scored the first touchdown in the press box. Everybody's like, "Oh, don't let it be Mason. It'll be Mason." And he gets up and does that shimmy shake, Michael Jackson dance.
Yep.
I just started laughing in the press box because he torched Finnegan on that.
Well, and that they had already kind of had their thing too. You know, Finnegan got into it with Andre Johnson and Derek.
Yeah,
but. So we had Chris Johnson. Derek and I had Chris Johnson on probably been almost a year. And he was they were going back and forth about that game. And finally I go, is it true? Were they twisting your ankle? And Chris is like, heck yeah. I mean, first play, I had the ball and I feel just somebody's twisting my ankle.
Game changer, man.
Yep. Remember they took him out?
Remember who fumbled on the five going in for touchdown and got hit? Tight end. He's named after something you find in the sea.
Something you find in the sea.
Yeah, algae crumpler.
Oh, crumpler, yeah.
Fumbled.
Yep, that's right.
Going in.
But taking Chris Johnson out of that game.
Was, oh, absolutely yeah. It did.
So, going back to the opener, it's not everything, but the fact that this team's on a 7-game losing streak.
Ooh, ouch.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Because that will be the narrative. You know, if they go down there and even if they play fine and they, you know, lose on a field goal at the end, the fact that it's now an 8-game losing streak, that's the narrative.
Well, and then the talk starts, you hear all that stuff. Go down and win, quiet a bunch of people.
Yep. You go down and win, you shut a lot of things up.
You do.
Whether it's the offensive line or now, you know, we'll break down and Jared will dissect it and watch the film and, you know, all that stuff.
How many Saints games did he watch? I tweeted him yesterday. He only mentioned it every 8 seconds.
I know.
How many Saints games he watched.
You work with the GM for 5 years, and all of a sudden you're a scout.
Watch the last four games. to me, watching the last four games of the prior season means nothing. Because I think Kuharsky tweeted out today that Titans have a 45% turnover on the roster.
Yeah. I saw that he tweeted that out last night.
Okay.
I retweeted it. Yeah. That was a really good stat. Like that, I mean, I know it was, let's see.
Nearly half your roster is gone from last year.
Yeah, which we don't know if that's a good 45.3%.
Who's the 0.3?
I don't know. 24
kickers.
Players. I mean, kicker is one of them.
24 players brought
24
in.
24 players.
Yeah.
And, 11 guys are rookies. So, I mean, we don't know how that's going to turn out or not. 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Can the narrative change with one game? And how will we view Mike Vrabel? Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, had some comments yesterday. You'll hear those coming up next. Chase and Big Joe Show, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Big Joe Show, 1025, 1063, The Game. We're broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, an electrical studio. Hey, we are your racing station here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You can tune in this Sunday for the Hollywood Casino 400 at Kansas at 1 o'clock. NASCAR on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game, presented by O'Charley's.
I'm so glad they scrapped that race in New York City or wherever it was, Staten Island, whatever it was going to be.
Oh, that they were talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just stay where people love you,
oh,
man.
Oh, they're doing that. Now, they did do a street race in Chicago because they had the track in Chicago and it wasn't doing well and they closed it. It's just sitting there now. They did the street race in Chicago and it had a lot of success.
Yeah, so. I watched that.
Yeah, it was
rained.
Cool.
It was cool, yeah. But you had to be different. You just couldn't get them an oval and go round and round and round.
Yeah, and I mean, they are doing different things, which I like. And, you know.
Didn't they one year have, or this might have been the Fairground Speedway, where they determined the pole position by a 100-yard dash? No, or is that just a gimmick that I made up in my head?
I think
somebody
had it. I think I know what you're talking about. I think that might have been an all-star race or something.
Okay.
That they did.
We need more of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's
we need more of these.
The new ideas are good. You know, some are good, some are not.
But the drivers now are all fit. I mean, back in the day, they were looked like me and you.
Oh, yeah. The best was you had, what was his name?
Waltrip Petty.
No.
Yarborough.
No.
Bonnet.
Red there Roberts. Was a guy that was, he was smoking a cigarette while he was driving the car. Like, he'd be going like down the backstretch at Talladega and light one up.
I mean, and their fights back then were like
fights.
They didn't, there was no camera. They didn't care about me. They wanted just to fight you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 79. That's the thing. The 79 500 was the first flag to flag televised race in history on CBS.
Wow. Okay.
There was a huge snowstorm that hit the Southeast. In the southeast, northeast, like that whole side of the country, and so everybody snowed in. So everybody's watching this race.
Yeah, love it.
And Donnie Allison and Cale Yarborough are fighting for the lead. They wreck on the last lap. Richard Petty wins the race, and they go in the infield. And the video is still iconic. And just start beating the crap out of each other. Donnie's swinging his helmet.
Ooh.
Bobby Allison comes off the track to see what's going on, Kale turns around and just sucker punches him, so yes. Then they get into it. And you have all these people that are snowed in with nothing to do that are watching this.
I love that. I got to find that clip.
Oh, it's all over. And that's what put it on the map.
Oh, that's great.
And the legend is Bill France Sr. And they kind of did this in Days of Thunder. You remember the with Fred Thompson and sitting in the room with Tom Cruise. And it's like, you know, if you so much as touch each other on the racetrack again, I'm going to tear your car apart. And then maybe you can put it together. Put it back together and get in the race. That was kind of the legend that Bill France told them, like, you boys go out back, you settle it, and then you stay away from each other on the racetrack. And, nice. And they all walked in with shiners.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, I got to watch that. I'll after the show, I'll look that clip up. Yeah.
So that was the old days, the good days, and now they're kind of getting back to that in some ways. I like how they're doing the schedule and trying to go to these historic tracks like Nashville, the fairgrounds, like Wilkesboro.
Well, so let me ask you, you're a racing guy, and we'll get back to football in a moment. So now with the imaging, you know, and the promotions,
Dick
and publicity.
Trickle. Thank you, Ricky. Dick Trickle, that's who it was.
Easy. With all the promotion, it's not – you don't want to sponsor a guy that weighs 360 pounds, the old race car drivers. Because now you're out in the public, and now it's more of a – you've seen everywhere. But back in the day, I mean, some of those guys were fantastic.
Sure. And the other thing, too, is – and it's not going to get away from this, but like you had – used to – like Dale, let's use Dale Earnhardt Jr. as an example. He was almost – he was in his late 20s by the time he got to the Cup Series.
Right.
Now you're promoting these 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like Joe Gibbs' grandson, Ty, is racing in the Cup Series, and he's 20 years old. And it's too soon because it's too much for him. And, like, you know, people don't like Ty because he kind of has a, you know, he's got an attitude. Like, he's got a quick little temper. And then he
beat it out of him.
But the problem is with him is he wants to wreck a guy and go, well, you're going to race me like that. I'm going to race him like that. But I want to praise Jesus for the win that we had today.
He knows his priorities are. All right, so who's the oldest racer in NASCAR?
Right now?
Derek Cope.
He shows up every now and then.
He does. Get two laps in, get 10 grand, and go home.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Kevin Harvick maybe, but he's retiring. Kyle Busch is up there. See, that's the other thing is like this new crop that came in the 2000s, now they're retiring.
Carl Edwards.
He's been
Keselowski.
Gone. Keselowski's still there.
Okay.
Jimmy Edwards,
Johnson.
Jimmy's retired. Yeah, I mean, he shows up every now and then, but... Carl did a thing out at the Super Speedway, which was cool.
I saw that. Did he do a backflip?
No, he said he hadn't done a backflip in like 5 years.
Okay.
So he would have hurt himself. But he still looks like he's fit. Like he still looks like he could get in the car and be fine.
Hey, if you get out of there unscathed, good for you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of those that it was like he had won a ton of races. He'd put up a Hall of Fame resume. He lost the championship basically by a lap. And he's like, yeah, I'm done.
Good.
I'm going to go spend time with my family.
Back to Missouri.
Yep, and that's what he did.
Fly my plane.
Yep, pretty much.
I'm not getting those little small planes. I'll pass.
Yeah.
Carl can call me.
William in Dover said Jimmy Spencer. It wasn't Jimmy Spencer. It was Dick Trickle.
Come on. Who said that?
I mean, Jimmy Spencer may have smoked. He definitely could have, but Dick Trickle is who I was referring to.
Smoking in the car. Well, I mean, baseball managers used to smoke it. I mean, there's a great iconic picture of Dave Parker smoking in the dugout at the All-Star game. I think it was in Seattle in 79. He's smoking in the dugout during the game. Lynn Dawson in the Super Bowl smoking in the locker room with a couple frescas hanging around. It was all did it back in the day.
I know. I mean, but it's and Winston Cigarettes was the sponsor. So
he's in camera shot. No, they didn't have a camera shot back then. Dick Trickle, how'd they know he was smoking?
There's somewhere an in car camera of him hanging out of his mouth.
It's fantastic.
It's awesome. He was
flipping out the
crowd. He was the guy. Like he was the one. Wouldn't put up with anything.
Oh man, I love that. I'll look that up too as well.
So. There you go, our little tangent of the day.
It's just fun. It goes back to, you know, the gimmicks and making things work.
Now, what's funny is to circle back to the Titans, Mike Vrabel, I think he could have hung tough with, like, the Earnhardt, Petty.
He was a gimmick.
Waltrip, that guy. You know,
he caught 8 touchdown passes?
Mm-hmm, 10.
10 or whatever it was. Never dropped one?
Yeah.
That's a gimmick in football.
But have. I mean, he was like, he's hard nosed and tough and no BS, and you know, like that era of racing football, anything, like, you know, he would have hung with, no doubt.
You think so?
Yeah, because
somebody's a big Vrabel fan.
I do like Mike Vrabel.
Start calling
me
Buck.
Who's that?
A friend of mine that works down at Twice Daily.
I only know Andrew.
It works at Twice Daily down the road.
But no, look, I like Vrabel, and you will notice this the longer we do this. But then there's times where he just pisses me off with some of the, you know, where he don't want to answer a question. Like Kaharsky may ask a good question, but he's already mad at Kaharsky, so he just wants to be. I call it the Vrabel pissy scale. And, you know, he's an 8 on the pissy scale. And it's just like, just answer the question and move on.
He's not going to. That's the whole point.
I know. I know he's not. And, you know, now he's, I mean, there's rules in place that he's putting in about in the locker room and stuff. It's just like the lockdown. And, you know, it's like, okay, whatever. Paranoia of being a coach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all like this now. Most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to get any better.
No, it's not.
Dylan says, was it Joey? Oh, Burrow. Yeah, smoked a cigar. Well, we know that. We have the video of Joe Burrow smoking
a cigar. But not during
the
game.
No, this was different.
I mean, the Alabama guys or in Tennessee, when they win, they smoke cigars in the locker room afterwards. There's a great picture of when Butch Jones came back to Tennessee, I think it was 18, and Tennessee – Alabama beat Tennessee. You know, Butch is back when his first year. He's at Alabama. And he's smoking a cigar with the guy next to him, number 73 for Alabama, right? And somebody tweeted out a picture this weekend and said, "Hey, Butch, how much did you lose by this weekend?" And it's got 73-0, which he lost to Arkansas State.
That video of him getting consoled, like, is the funniest thing ever.
You look at it thinking, because he's about ready to cry. I mean, he did the thing.
Looks old, too.
He's like, my age. Thanks.
Sorry.
That's all right.
But he, I mean, you don't look old. He does.
That might be the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
I mean,
besides, get out of my driveway.
You're spring chicken.
All right, who we got next? I'm excited about our next guest.
Yes, John McClain is going to join us from Houston every week, 9:30 on Wednesdays. We'll talk 30 minutes with him about football. That is next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, every Wednesday at 9:30, appointment listening. John McClain going to join us from Houston, and he is on the line with us now. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you for having me on. I'm really looking forward to it. I now have two shows in Nashville, my home away from home.
Yes, yeah, we can hear you with the guys from Outkick, with Hutton and Withrow on 94.9 The Fan, and then with us here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You're still writing for sportsradio610.com. You seem to be having fun we're not even going to call it retirement. I don't think there's any such thing with you.
I retired from the Chronicle a year and a half ago so I could get my pension and I could start doing commercials for my radio station, Sports Radio 610, the Texans flagship. And so they asked me, they said, "Would you write a column? We're trying to beef up our website." I said, "Sure." And now I end up writing 5 a week. And they said, "Could you do a podcast with Sean Pendergast, one of my morning co-hosts?" And I said, "Sure." That's now 3 Utopia football podcasts, which are 40 to 45 minutes a week. And then I make 6 appearances on the station. And I also do weekly shows, Nashville, Knoxville, Las Vegas, Waco, San Antonio, and Austin, and I have a blast. This is my 47th year covering the NFL. Every year, the start reminds me of when I was a kid, and I was so excited about the first day of school to see whose class I was going to be in and who was going to be in my class, and that's the way I still feel about the start of the college football season and the NFL season.
Yeah, and John, I mean, I feel the same way because there's – the excitement, but there's also the uncertainty. I mean, there are the teams that we think are going to be good, and then there are the teams we think are going to be bad, and we always know that there are surprises. So I think you and I, the last time we talked, I think we kind of agree. The AFC South, it is what it is. I believe it's between the Jags and the Titans. Houston's in a rebuild. Indy's in a rebuild. But how do you view it now going into week 1, knowing what the rosters look like?
we all know Mike Vrabel's a hell of a coach. And when you got a healthy Derrick Henry and then, you know, they were 500 last year with Ryan Tannehill. That would, if he had stayed all year and they'd been 500, they'd been playing for the division on the last day of the season. And I remember in 2018, after the Jaguars had come close to going to the Super Bowl and losing at Foxborough in the championship game, everybody picked them to run away with the division, and they didn't, and they haven't won a division title since, except last year right at the end. And they had a great playoff game to overcome that 27-point deficit against the Chargers, which to me was more of a Chargers choke job. And so I'm not so sure they're going to run away with it, even though I think we all believe Trevor Lawrence is going to be a great quarterback, took a big step last year under Doug Peterson. But the Titans' M.O. is tried and true. Run the ball. Have Ryan Tannehill work off the play-action game, which they do as well as anybody. Play great run defense first and foremost, and then get after the quarterback. And that's not going to change. Bringing in a healthy DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a big boost to the offense, and I can't wait to see Hop because he's one of my all-time favorite players to cover. What he does up there, because I can't wait to see him. I just wish Texans didn't have to wait till late in the year to play the Titans, and I can't wait to see him go against them. So I think it's a two-team race, for last place, too.
John McClain is with us from Houston, and you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, but the other addition that I know you're familiar with is Tim Kelly taking over as the offensive coordinator for the Titans. Watching him through training camp in the preseason, you're not going to see a whole lot, but watching him in practice, he's an intense dude, which I think matches Mike Vrabel. I really like the addition. I know he was here last year, but elevating him to offensive coordinator, what do you think we can see out of him as the play caller and working with Ryan Tannehill?
Tim Kelly came to Houston with Bill O'Brien from Penn State, where he'd been a GA. And first two, 3 years, I had people that worked with him behind the scenes talk about how impressed he was. And no matter how early somebody came to work, Tim was always there. And he did it the hard way. He started off in an office, basically, there was a closet. And he was with a couple of other guys like him, quality control guys. He worked his way up to tight ends, offensive line. He kind of was like Arthur Smith. You know, Arthur survived four head coaches there in different roles, and they all liked him, and now he's a head coach. And Bill O'Brien told me probably it was even before he made him the play caller. He was offensive coordinator, and O'Brien called the plays. He told me, he said, Tim Kelly's going to be a head coach in this league. And I thought, well, okay, Bill, that's because you had him at Penn State. You brought him with him, and you brought him with you, and you want to make him look good. But the more I watched Tim, the more excited I was about the possibilities when he took over play calling, and he did. And he did a really good job. Now, if you're a play caller and you have a bad quarterback, you're going to be a bad play caller. There's just nothing you can do about it. And he had Watson. He did a really good job of coaching Deshaun Watson. And the only other coach that O'Brien told me would be a head coach, it was after his first year, 2014, and I said, if you could have any coach on your staff, just one, who would it be? And I thought it would be Romeo Crennel, his defensive coordinator, who's one of the best in NFL history. He said, Mike Vrabel. I said, Vrabel? Why in the world would you say Vrabel? He's only been in NFL as a coach for 1 year. He said, let me tell you something. That guy has been preparing himself to be a head coach since he was playing in the NFL. He went to Ohio State. He learned there. And he said he's going to be a head coach, and I want him on my staff, and he's the one I would take. And he was right. You know, Mike, after he left there after that 2017 season, he gets universal respect around the country. And that's why I think as long as Tannehill can stay healthy, that he can stay right up there with the Jaguars.
The fantastic John McClain is with us this morning on 102.5 The Game. John, they open the game against New Orleans. Do you like that for the Titans? Because there's no Kamara playing, unsure with Derek Carr. Titans really have a really good defense. Your thoughts on this matchup?
I think the Titans are going to shut down the Saints running game. Derek Carr is not a threat to take off and run. And with all due respect to Derek, who's had some really good seasons, they're acting like he's the savior there, but he's not Drew Brees, and he's been in the playoffs one time. And so I think they got a chance to win, run the ball, control the clock, keep the defense fresh. New Orleans got a good defense. And but when they don't have a running game, unless they're going to unveil somebody that we don't know about. And I'll say this about Dennis Allen. He's a really good defensive coordinator. He was the head coach 2 years for the Raiders, and he was 4-12 both years and got fired. And last year was nothing special, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think here the spread's 3.5. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Titans don't just win that game outright, following their formula of stopping the run, forcing the pass, getting after the quarterback, and then controlling the ball with the running game. And having Tannehill, to me, when Derrick Henry is in the game, he freezes the linebackers, safeties, everybody, as well as anybody I've ever seen. And then that makes Tannehill, it opens up receivers for him as he rolls out. So I think their offense is going to be good, not great, just good. Derrick Henry's got a chance to lead the league in rushing again as he tries to make his way to being a serious candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
John, you've covered NFL a long time. You've seen it all. The kicking situation, why is it so hard to find a kicker these days? Was it like this in the 70s and 80s? I don't remember it being that difficult, but now it's like so difficult to find a decent kicker.
My first training camp was in 1977, and the Oilers had their kicker. And back then, you used to keep the kickers. And now, I think, like the Texans, I have a kicker for 7 years, Kymie Fairbairn. They have a snapper for 14 years, John Weeks, and they have a punter for 3. But you got to get a guy, and you got to believe in him. A lot of teams draft kickers, and they still don't work out. Look at Cade York. You guys know very well from the SEC. He just got, I think, cut. And so you've got to find somebody you like. You've got to give him a chance. There's so many kickers who have been really good after they've been cut, some multiple times. Pat Leahy, one of the best ever, cut 8 times. And I'm not sure why it finally clicks for the kicker, but I tell the Texans, when you see all these kickers coming and going through facility doors and they can't seem to settle on one, it's got to be frustrating. A lot of teams they know that kickers win games more than backup position players, so you'd think they'd pay one a lot of money, but you see a lot of them making moves with kickers because it saves them money on a salary cap. To me, I want a kicker who can kick one with no time left, with 1 second left on the clock, as long as distance is in 50. If it's over 50, that's great. But they don't have to kick a lot of 50-yard field goals. You just want consistency in the 40s and 30s. And I'm amazed that more teams can't find kickers that they can count on.
It's funny, John, when we were having the kicking conversation with the Titans, I heard in my head the late, great Floyd Reese's voice a few years ago when he first started here with us, and he was on with Jared Stillman, our afternoon show host, and Jared's asking him, like, what do you think of the Titans? And Floyd just looks at him and goes, we don't have a right tackle. And that was basically what he said. And so I hear, we don't have a kicker in Floyd's voice, and we'll see what Nick Folk can do.
One time with the Oilers, they drafted a kicker. And the general manager, Mike Holovac, was really excited about him. He is from Air Force, so they put him on the phone for us during the draft, and he talked about how excited he was to come to Houston and kick after his Air Force commitment. And we're like, what? And he had 4-year Air Force commitment, never ended up kicking for the Oilers. So teams try, and sometimes they get it, and sometimes they don't. Folk, I think, is what? He's 39 now.
Yeah.
So something like that. He doesn't get distance on his kickoffs, but he can still kick it. And you just want a guy who can make it when you need it inside the 50. Anything outside the 50 is gravy. There's no pressure on those guys to make those. But, man, you got to get the consistency. And the Titans are going to play a lot of close games. With that formula that Vrabel uses, they're going to play a lot of close ones, as you guys know. And having a kicker who can make them and consistently make them is paramount.
John McClain is with us from Houston and will be with us every Wednesday at 9:30. We'll step away, have more with John coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you on this Wednesday. John McClain from Houston joining us. Again, you can check out all his work, sportsradio610.com, for his columns there. Does a bunch of podcasts as well. We're excited to have him every Wednesday at 9:30.
All right, John, Chase and I were talking. There's not a better person in the world to ask this question than to you. What is it with Houston people's obsession with when the Titans are going to go throwback uniforms? I saw the University of Houston had the same colors this weekend. Every time the Titans post those throwback uniforms, people, it seems, on social media from Houston lose their mind. Why? Why do they do that?
Joe, it's an obsession because the flames are fanned by the talk show hosts because they think Columbia Blue belongs to Houston. Well, it doesn't. It belongs to the Titans, who are the Oilers. And I think this rivalry has never been what it should have been because neither team was good at the same time playing games to get in the playoffs, in the playoffs, chance to go to the Super Bowl. They've never done it. So if it takes the uniforms to stir it up, that's better than nothing. We call it uniform wars. And my station wants to run me out of town because I'm the only person I know that likes seeing the uniforms again. I love seeing them at the University of Houston. I'm going to love seeing the Titans wear them because I love that Columbia blue. I covered it for more than 20 years. I did a column where I called guys like Warren Moon, Robert Brazil, Dan Pastorini, Bruce Matthews, and they all liked it. They all liked the idea that the Titans are going to wear them because nobody else can wear them. That's what they said before the University of Houston did. Turns out our soccer team has worn Columbia blue. A couple of our other teams are. They just didn't get any attention. And the University of Houston did because they did a great video that didn't release till Thursday. Carl Lewis recommended it, and it was all about Houston, H-Town, and then University of Houston. And then right at the end, they showed a camera on a shoe that went up the side of the uniform, and it was the same stripe that the Oilers wore. And then it got to the jersey, and then they sprung it on everybody. And I understand the NFL got on them pretty good, so they can't sell them, can't make any money out of them, which is a bummer to me because a lot of people would have bought them because they love Columbia blue, or as Bud Adams called it, Colombian blue.
But, you know, John, in the 2009 Hall of Fame game when the Titans wore those throwback early Oiler uniforms, there was a little bit of griping, but nothing near this. It's just amazing how this just took off.
I was at that game, and I remember I came up there for a lot of games in 97 and 98 when they were the Tennessee Oilers. And they wore their uniforms. And I remember the last game at Vanderbilt. And Bruce Matthews and Mike Munchak could not have loaded one more jersey or one more helmet. They carried out everything Oilers that they could because we knew they were going to be the Titans and they were going to have new stadium, new facility, and new uniforms. And I've asked Bruce and Mike how much they actually got away with, and they both said as much as we could carry. So the longer it's like, you know, nostalgia, you know, we're all big on nostalgia. And the longer it goes, the more people think the Oilers never lost a game and that they won multiple championships. They don't remember the bad times, just the good. And I think it's great. But down here, boy, people, it just gets the blood boiling. And I think it's tremendous for talk shows.
Absolutely. John, I want to get your thoughts on, I know he's coaching college football, but Deion Sanders, he has really upset the apple cart and what he's doing over there. Your thoughts on Deion and where he might be in, say, 3 to 5 years?
You mean the next coach of the Cowboys?
Oh, okay.
I tweeted that Saturday night because I don't think it would happen next year because the Cowboys are going to have another good year. They won't go to the Super Bowl for the 27th year in a row. But eventually, say 2 or 3 years, Mike McCarthy would be fired. And if Deion is still at Colorado, it just seems to be a natural. Jerry Jones won 3 Super Bowls with college coaches, 2 with Jimmy Johnson, 1 with Barry Switzer. Jerry is 80. He wants desperately to win another Super Bowl. When he has an opening, or if they don't, advance in the playoffs. Fans are going to be clamoring for Deion. A lot of fan bases will be, as will the media that covers the team. Deion lived up there. I don't know if he's still got a home there since he coached at Jackson State now in Boulder. But now it's just one game. You know, they still got to play Oregon and USC. But, man, they were so impressive. And if he can keep it up, people say, well, could this work in the NFL? Well, of course it could work in the NFL. He played in the NFL. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we do know that Colorado is not his last stop. And I just think it would be such a natural. Coach Prime with his general manager, president, and owner, Jerry Jones.
Okay, so I don't think you're crazy with that, but you know, you mentioned the Cowboys in the early 90s. Jimmy Johnson's best hire, I think, was Norv Turner. So who would be his Norv Turner?
I have no idea because I'm not familiar enough with the staff whether he would bring his coaches. His coaches did a tremendous job. The guys that caught Shedeur Sanders' passes have 273 yards after the catch. Now, that's not take away from his performance because he was great. But those people there are doing a great coaching job, and it's not all Deion. You know, you take 77 or 80 new players, and you have them look like a cohesive unit in the first game. That is incredible coaching, organization. And that's the thing that impressed me the most. If they had done this, say, four or five games in the season, okay, they had time to adjust to all the changes. But, man, to do it when they did, it's almost mind-boggling.
John, the Titans, we know, added DeAndre Hopkins. We're talking about that earlier. But what are your thoughts on Treylon Burks as he goes into his second year? He's looked good in training camp. He got hurt, but he seems like I think he's going to be okay for week one. But obviously a lot of pressure on him considering they traded A.J. Brown and then drafted him with that pick. So what are kind of your thoughts on the second-year receiver?
Before I get to Burks, I like to say, you know, they signed Chris Moore. He'd been here for 2 years. A class act, a good receiver. He can come off the bench. He can start. So I think that's going to be a really good move. As far as Burks, you know, I've been saying since they signed Hop, he'll be the best thing that happens to Burks. Number one, he's got the experience. Burks will look up to him. Hop will help him behind the scenes because there's nothing DeAndre Hopkins hasn't seen or hasn't faced, every kind of coverage. And because D-Hop was never a speed demon, you lose speed, so what? And because he didn't have that much to lose, he's all about intermediate hands, getting open, fighting for the ball. And Burks is going to see him. He's going to see it on tape. And I think it will help his adjustment. And we all know most players make their biggest adjustment going into their second season. They know what it's like to be a pro off the field, in the classroom, on the field. I think you'll see Burks take a big jump. I don't think anybody's going to be catching 80 or 90 passes because that's not the formula. But the key is to have a receiver like Hop take pressure off Burks and let Burks become who the Titans thought he was when they drafted him in the first round.
All right, John, I got to ask, do you make predictions? And if so, who do you like in the Super Bowl in February?
I just had a column on sportsradio610.com. There's no paywall. And I like to be different. I didn't want to pick Kansas City. No team has repeated since the Patriots going back to the early 2000s. Didn't pick Philadelphia. No team other than the Patriots has lost the Super Bowl and gone back since the 90s. And so I want to be different. Nobody will remember it if I'm wrong. But if I'm right, and I've hit on this twice, I picked Baltimore over Seattle in the Super Bowl. And 1 year I picked Baltimore and they beat San Francisco. Every media outlet in town called me. 1 year I picked Philadelphia to go to the Super Bowl and they did. And all the talk shows up there called me. But all my wrong picks every year, it's like Jonathan Hagen keeps saying on OutKick that I get my Super Bowl prediction right every year. Well, it's not true, but if he wants to keep telling people, that's fine with me. So I'm going with the Ravens.
That's awesome. Okay. What would a Detroit-Cleveland Super Bowl mean to the NFL?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. The Lions have won one playoff game since the 50s. We're going to put Buddy Parker, who won two championships with the Lions. Hearing Lions and championships in the same sentence just doesn't sound right. And it should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. And the Browns, I believe I read a stat, ever since they have come back, they have never been on the plus side on a points differential. And they might happen this year with Watson, although I guarantee you Watson ain't going to like playing in that cold weather, outdoor with snow and wind. But I think it would be great for the league just because those teams have been so bad for so long.
John, really looking forward to doing this every week. Thanks so much. It's going to be a lot of fun, and enjoy the games this weekend.
Chase and Joe, thank you guys very much. It's an honor to be on with you, and I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. John McClain, sportsradio610.com. You can check out the Hutopia podcast as well, and does a lot. He's going to join us every Wednesday at 9:30
Love
here
it.
On the show.
That's good stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. He's covered the 47 years he's covered the league, so definitely be a wealth of knowledge for us. We'll have Rick Stockstill coming up at 10:30. Coming up next, though, our bet, a topic that we had yesterday, came up with Trevor Maddich. You'll hear his response next. 102.5, 106.3, the game.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.